So we submitted the application back in July, and that was formally accepted for the examination, and then the government ran a consultation phase which ended on the 18th of November, and we had nearly 500 responses to that, which is great. And we now have had confirmed the start of the examination. So that is from the 3rd of March, and that starts with what's called a preliminary meeting, and it will be a roughly 6-month process. And that is an independent panel of examiners that will be looking at the application, asking us lots of questions, asking our stakeholders lots of questions, with the view to narrow down the issues and then provide a recommendation to the Council of Ministers, probably in the autumn.
Because looking back to last year when it was accepted for examination, I think there was some misunderstanding on the island, perhaps that meant that the application had been accepted, but it's just for this phase, isn't it? So you mentioned briefly there, so what does this next phase, what does the examination involve? Are you involved quite heavily?
Yeah, so it's a good point, actually. Being accepted doesn't mean the application or the consent has been accepted. It's merely that the application has been accepted for examination, and that's now the phase we're in. Yes, we're involved, so it will be our project team. It will be some of our specialist consultants, so some of our consultants who have done the assessments on things like shipping, on fishing, on birds. They may well be involved. The examiners will ask questions on a range of issues that we provided in our environmental impact assessment. They will also aim questions at stakeholders, and particularly in areas where we may not have full agreement with those stakeholders. So we've worked really closely with our stakeholders. We have a lot of areas where we do agree, but clearly there are some that will be explored during the examination where there's still a bit of work to go, and we'll be looking to secure mitigation and compromise where required to ensure that we've got as far as possible our stakeholders on board and minimising those environmental impacts as much as we possibly can.
We understand it can take several months, this next phase. In your experience, how long are we expecting it to take?
In the UK, and just bear in mind this hasn't been done on the Isle of Man previously, this marine infrastructure consent, so it is right to, but it broadly follows the UK process as we understand. That is pretty fixed. It will be a 6-month period. I think it's technically 130 working days in the MIC, so we anticipate that the examiners will stick to that, which means we would expect the examination part to finish at beginning of September.
Those near 500 responses that you mentioned from the consultation last year, what happens with them now? Have you been going through them? What were those responses like?
Yes, we've been going through those. We actually had a request from the examination board to provide individual responses to all 477 responses, which we have now done. We have submitted that last Thursday. That was a significant piece of work the team has been working on, culminating in over 1,500 pages. In terms of the content, they range, as you would expect, between kind of positive support, can see the financial, economic benefits for the project, to concerns, particularly around the visual impact on that northeast coast, and some concerns around how we will mitigate particularly fishing and shipping. So it was a real range. Roughly, I would say 2/3, maybe a bit more, had significant concerns or objecting to the project, and around 25% to 1/3 who were broadly supportive, which is, for the stage we're at, we're okay with. We do, as we find usually, that it's people who have those concerns that speak a bit more loudly about these applications. But we want to work with everyone and everybody on the island to understand those concerns and, as I say, work with them to mitigate wherever we can.
Have you found the input of, say, the local authorities? We know there's been a couple which have objected quite vocally, as you mentioned, to these plans. Have you found that feedback helpful?
Yeah, it has been helpful, and I think it's been helpful for us in terms of, in terms of understanding where we need to be a bit more vocal about what we have done in the past and use our experience, certainly in the UK, where we built out 12, or we own 12 operational wind farms. But also to, you know, to highlight where people need to have more kind of confidence in both us as the developer, but also the process. And I think it's, we have to remind ourselves, we've gone through this or a very similar process lots of times, but people haven't on the island. So it is absolutely helpful to hear people's concerns. And for instance, you mentioned those local councillors. We've got meetings this week with commissioners on the northeast coast. So we are having those conversations, and we want to be open and transparent. And it isn't about trying to convince people to change their minds. It's about simply presenting the facts and the opportunities as well as the potential impacts.
Do you think there's good back and forth dialogue going on, like you mentioned there, those meetings, and you're not trying to convince them? Do you feel like they're trying to convince you on the flip side?
Well, I think we have to remember that we were invited 10 years ago by the Isle of Man government at the time to put in a proposal for an offshore wind farm. It wasn't ourselves coming to the island. We were invited, and we were lucky enough to win that tender. And similarly, it isn't our decision as to whether the island decides to go forward with offshore wind farm. Clearly, we would like to be involved, and we believe there's a real economic opportunity and energy security opportunity for the island, which could be a real catalyst to economic growth. And that's what we're hearing from business leaders, the chamber, other people we've been speaking to on the island. So clearly we want to be given the opportunity to do that, but ultimately it isn't our decision. So And that's fine. It's a democratic process, and we totally understand that. But I think it's really important that we, local people, residents, stakeholders, at least see both sides, both positive and negative, and then a decision can be weighed up by the Council of Ministers, ultimately.
We've got around a month left before this examination process starts. What can people do now? What can you do now up until that point? What is there left to prepare, I suppose?
I imagine we're quite prepared, I guess. We have gone through this process in the UK, or a very similar process to this. We are continuing, we will do for the next month and also into examination to have discussions with stakeholders to try and agree positions where we still have perhaps outstanding areas where we don't quite agree on things. So we will be continuing that process. But yes, we're very much preparing for that examination process. It's already started, to be perfectly honest, with the requests I mentioned.
And we've got this booklet in front of us outlining the financial and economic benefits. This was from August last year, the last time we spoke, and there was this figure of £2 billion, so the financial benefits to the Isle of Man of this Morvanin project. Have we had an update on these benefits, as you put it, to the Isle of Man?
Yeah, so the £2 billion figure is based on our expectation around the taxation regime that's likely to come forward, and also the seabed rental for any offshore wind farm. And that is a figure that broadly is recognised by the Isle of Man government. I think it was in the response, I think it was the Treasury response or the Department for involved in that taxation made that in their public response, that the £2 billion was roughly a reasonable figure. So that's still there. We've, as mentioned last August, we've made a commitment on the Community Investment Fund. That's £1.5 million per year for 15 years. And we've also committed to at least 30 long-term Isle of Man-based jobs during the operational phase. We have a number of commitments around biodiversity and apprenticeships and training that we will continue to see through. I think the one area that we are still working with both Isle of Man government and Manx Utilities is on how we could provide power directly to the island. At the moment, we have the opportunity to do that through a direct connection back to the island, but also potentially through the existing Manx One connector. And the project's discussing both options with Manx Utilities and keen to work with the Isle of Man government to deliver wholesale electricity to the island in a way that could or would result in lower bills for consumers. So that, just to be absolutely clear, that is something that isn't within our control, but we recognise the need to provide a tangible benefit for everyone on the island. So that is still an area we're going to have to discuss with the government, but we're really clear on that we're open.
There's a lot of government time and energy being spent on this project, not just Ørsted's. So what costs does this come to the taxpayer?
So the full costs of the wind farm will be paid by Ørsted, or the Morvannen Offshore Wind Farm Limited Company. That includes the consent, includes the development, the construction, the operation and maintenance and decommissioning. So the project will not require any capital or operational expenditure risk to the government or taxpayers. So we are paying and we are taking the risk or ourselves, and if that leads to us not getting a consent, that will be something that we will pay as a company, and there will be no cost to the taxpayer.
And so over the next 6 months then, are we likely to hear many more updates from Ørsted in the meantime?
I think given we're about to go into an examination phase, one of the reasons we wanted to do these interviews before that started was that we're probably unlikely to do kind of direct interviews like this. But absolutely, if there's public interest, if people in media want to cover a story, we can absolutely provide written statements. But I think we need to let the independent process for the examination run and provide factual-based responses to based on that examination. So we will update where we can. If we've got a big update, particularly around the energy benefits, we will say it, but we will do it in the context of an independent examination running.
And so just finally then, in terms of this timeline that we're looking at, we're into this phase now. What would come after the examination phase, and when might we start seeing something being built out there in Manx waters?
Sure. So I mentioned that I think the examination should end beginning of September. Then there is then a period of time, usually around 3 months, for the examiners to write their recommendation report. That will then be submitted to the Council of Ministers. Obviously, it's likely to come after the elections on the island in September. A decision will then be made by that Council of Ministers. We would expect that either by the end of the year or perhaps into the beginning of 2027. Obviously, if that is a positive consent, we would then be looking, it's still probably a couple of years before we're thinking about actually boots on the ground or ships in the water, as it were. It takes a long time to build these offshore. They're big infrastructure projects. This is a £4 to £4.5 billion investment. So it's a significant amount of planning. So it will be some time before we have an operation. It will probably be into the 2030s before anything is constructed.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.